Thank you so much for joining us, Monica.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
I'm happy that you're here. Now, the Quiz Screen Mardi Gras Film Festival, I guess it's like such a monumental and important event in terms of like a LGBT film. And so what does it mean, I guess, to finally be able to have a locally produced film opening the festival for the first time in its history?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit overwhelming and exciting. When I, you know, made it just thinking this was going to be something for, you know, for that was available, you know, for queer teens or non-queer teens or people if they needed it. And so to know that it's going to get such a wonderful start into the world is just incredibly, incredibly exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And I guess like the like Mardi Gras itself is like this you know, I'd say lifelong for many people,
yeah,
lifelong event that kind of celebrates the vibrant and powerful impact of queer culture,
yeah,
within Australia. So do you think that maybe like choosing to open with your film for the film festival might start a trend of selecting more homegrown pieces to open the festival?
Yeah, definitely. And I think just the fact that when other filmmakers or people making content get to see that, you know, there is the platform there. I mean, I think Mardi Gras Film Festival has always had a really wonderful history of supporting local queer content. This is actually my second film to be in the Mardi Gras Film Festival.
Skin Deep?
Skin Deep, yeah. Yes. It was in the festival in 2015. So I think, like, the platform is there. It's just that extra boost for people to see, like, you know, these stories are worth, you know, spending your time on. I mean, Ellie and Abby's been a labour of love since 2016 for me, and it's a long game. And I think making any film, it can feel so overwhelming because it is such a long game.
Yeah.
So when opportunities like this arise, and I think people get to see, like, if you put in that hard work, just in general of making a film, it can be rewarded. And if that, you know, seeing that is can help other queer filmmakers go like, oh, great, just a reminder, that platform is there, I can invest in this and it, you know, will be worth it at the end. I think that's a really wonderful message. So
absolutely,
it's really
it
great.
Is. So moving away from, I guess, what it means to us, what it means to Australian filmmakers, yada, yada, what does it mean to you to have your film open the Mardi Gras Film Festival next year?
It is an absolute honour. I feel like this is something that, you know, I feel like there's all these other queer filmmakers that have kind of paved the way over the years. I think even still when I made Skin Deep, I don't think I knew like kind of the importance to myself of being a queer maker and a queer filmmaker,
a queer maker,
and putting a story out there and kind of what that meant to myself. And I think since I've made that and now witnessed other filmmakers who, not necessarily always in the feature space, but people like Julie Kalchef, who made Starting From Now, which was like kind of a web series that really, I think, was the first one that really made people pay attention, like the funding bodies and all that, to kind of look at this web series and look at this effect that it's had. And particularly for someone like myself to see that and just, I kind of feel like seeing other filmmakers like that kept pushing me along, like kept pushing me forward.
Yeah.
And so I feel like to be opening the festival, I almost feel like I'm standing on the, you know, the shoulders of giants that have helped pave this way for me. So while it's incredibly important to me as a filmmaker, it's also incredibly humbling to just be around, you know, kind of on the same path as these other filmmakers that have pushed so hard in the past, so that it was time that a story like this could get to open the film festival.
Absolutely. Now, pardon me, Ellie and Abby was originally a play that
it
you
was.
Wrote.
Yes.
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 Amazing. So I guess what about this play made you want to adapt it into a film?
When we did the play, well, originally, I wrote it as a play because I had the story in my head, and it was a very clear story for me, and I just wanted to make it. Like, I just wanted to tell it, and I just wanted to make it, and I'd already made, you know, an independent film before, and I knew how hard it was, and I just thought, I want this story to be out there. I don't know that I've got another film in me. Like, I don't know that I can do that again. Yeah. So I'm going to make it as a play. And then we did it as a play. And a lot of the feedback we got was people saying that was just a film script. Like, that that wasn't a play. That
was
like
a
film
movie,
script.
But on stage.
It was. Everyone was like, you've just written another film and put it on stage. You know, and the more, and we got such a wonderful response from it and people seeing it. And then people just kind of kept saying to me, like, this should be your next film. Like, this should be your next film. This is what you should be working on.
Yeah.
And it got to the point, I think it was even like halfway through the play run where I was like, yeah, this is going to be my next film. I have to. And to be honest, I wasn't done with it. Like, when we finished the play, it felt like, I don't think any of us really were ready to put those characters away, which is why it's so exciting that Sophie Hawkshaw, who was one of the leads in the play, has now come back and is one of the leads in the film. It was the response from the audience and also the simplicity of the story. And also the other thing was that even when we were making the play and putting it out there, when I was trying to talk myself out of making a film, I was telling myself, I'm like, you can go and you can make this, but there is, by the time you get this up, knowing how long a film takes, there is going to be another film made in Australia that is this, you know, that is this story, that yeah. is this, you know, lesbian rom-com.
Well, I guess there's always that kind of worry of like, what if something I'm making is something that's already done?
I know. And it's so silly because it's like no heterosexuals are sitting there being like, maybe I shouldn't make another rom-com because somebody else might.
Yeah.
Like,
they're always thinking, you know what? I think The Notebook 2 is a good idea.
Yeah. We'll just do that again. And for some reason I had this thing on my head, like, you know, if we're going to make it, it has to be, you know, like it has to be the first, or which it's not, which is so silly, but it was this thing of being like, there can only be one, and so I don't want to step on anyone else's toes, or I don't want to try and make something that's, you know, that somebody else is out there already trying to make, like I want to let them do it. And then, you know, it kind of became clear that if I wanted this story to exist in the film, in a film world, I was going to have to, you know, push it.
Yeah.
And even if there was going to be another one, there can be two, and that is a good thing.
It's a great thing.
That is a great thing.
It's just that there is, I hate to sound all like conspiracy theorist, but there is this kind of like, we've kind of been brainwashed in a sense to think that like a normal amount of queer media is way too much.
Well, that's exactly right. It's this thing of being like, you know, oh, what if I'm oversaturating the market? Like, no, I'm not.
Absolutely not. Like, how many Nicholas Sparks books? Yeah, books have been turned into films.
Oh.
All of them.
Yes.
All of them.
Too many.
And then you got what's his name? John Green.
Oh, yes, those ones.
Same deal. It's just like teen rom-coms almost always straight.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them and they're never going to stop.
Yeah.
But the second one comes out where it features a same-sex relationship, it's just like,
we've already got Love.
Throw it in my face, why don't you?
Exactly. We've already got Love, Simon. We don't need another one.
Love, Simon 2.
Love, Simon 2, which was brilliant. I did love Simon. And that came out while I was developing the film.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was only encouraging. So. Yeah. It was all fine. But there was definitely moments. And I think, you know, when it comes down to it, all that stuff I was kind of telling myself about, you know, oh, it won't be necessary. There'll be another one. Somebody else will do it. It'll be fine. I think overall it was just kind of like masking the fear of knowing that if I started to make this film and then it got to the point where we couldn't make it because of funding or because we couldn't get a distributor or we couldn't get, you know, those things that always stop particularly Australian films in their tracks, that it would just be so devastating.
Yeah.
That it was almost, you know, it's that thing of being like, I don't want to start in case I fail, because to fail on something like this would have felt so personal.
Absolutely.
I think.
Of course. So there kind of continues to be an increase in demand, thank God, for more like LGBTQI-centered films and romance stories. So how do you feel your play/film kind of falls into this call for more same-sex love stories?
I think the biggest thing about Ellie and Abby, which I really wanted it to fit into, was this space of family films. There's so many great queer films out there and there's many that I love, but there's very few I can watch with my mum.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Blue is the Warmest Colour. I cannot watch it with my mother.
No, absolutely not.
She would hate that. I would hate that. It would be awful. and so, yes, I think it fits into the space of, you know, it's definitely a movie for teens. It's definitely a movie that adults can enjoy. And it is also a movie that they can watch together and not feel like, you know, you have to make an excuse to go make a cup of tea because the sex scene on the screen
it's
is
like,
too
oh,
intense.
I need to get the food.
Oh, sorry, Mum. I'm just going to. You stay.
Oh, they're getting sweaty. I have to go take a pool.
Oh, no, I can
right
see where
now.
This is going
to
go. Oh, God. So, and again, love those films.
Oh, yeah.
But this fits into kind of a different space of that kind of a thing. Because I think, you know, we all talk about like representation and seeing yourself represented. And I think growing up as a young person, knowing that the queer storylines and queer love stories didn't fit in a space of family safe films. They fit in a space of adult films that you discover when you're an adult or when you are an older teenager. I think there's something in that you really quite internalize. Mm. So I think, having something that fits into the sit down and watch this with your mum or your grandma or your dad, you know, you could.
And that's the thing, I guess like a lot of like maybe this, I don't know if it's kind of like an effect of society put onto film or an effect of film put onto society, but like kind of with all of these same-sex love stories that you cannot watch with your mum and dad, they're kind, I guess, I don't know if it's on purpose, but filmmakers kind of have this kind of like thought of hypersexualization, which means that, you know, it's not like a family-friendly movie and they seem to always fall into that category of adult, which isn't exactly a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. There is just still a sense of, you know, having to watch it alone in your room away from everyone.
Yeah. Just because it's sexuality doesn't mean it has to be sexual, you know?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think it's potentially nice to have something that doesn't, you know, that isn't sexualized.
Yeah.
As an option.
As an option. Just a little option. Yeah. You know, you can go to five different stores at just one, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So additionally, on top of that, how important is it? This is actually a question that's very important to me as well.
Mm.
How important is it to be able to create not only a same-sex-centered story, but specifically, you know, a WLW, women-loving women, plot?
Very important. I think it is something that is still... that there is less of. And I know when I've spoken to Lisa Rose, who runs
We chatted with her a little bit ago, but about Mardi Gras Film Festival.
About Mardi Gras Festival. Yeah. So she is the director of Mardi Gras Film Festival. And it's a regular conversation that she has every year about how much harder it is to find the female-driven stories for the festival than it is to find male-driven stories.
Mm.
And I think in this environment, it's very easy for people to think that, you know, oh, like everything's about women now. You've got to make a story about women and it's all women because, you know, they weren't there before and so now they've pushed for it. Now, if you're a man, you can't get a film made. And that, but then you look at the stats
not
and you're
true.
Like, no, it's actually not true. It's actually still really bad. Yeah. And it, you know, it meant that, I mean, our cast is pretty much, I don't know the exact number, but it's 93% female.
And your cast is huge.
My cast is huge.
Like, you know, great cast.
Yeah.
Just saying, great cast. You know, you got Marta Dusseldorp and Rachel House and Julia Billington. Like, and of course, you said Sophie Hawkshaw came back. Like, that is a fantastic cast.
Yes. Very, very lucky with the cast.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't look at a cast like that and be like, where are the men? You know what this cast is really missing? Some men.
Yeah.
And
where's Sylvester Stallone when you need that guy? I think he needs to bring the...
That's exactly right. Yeah. This story. You know what this story is missing? Brian Brown.
Yeah.
I don't think you can look at this cast and say that. So
No,
I'm very,
not.
Very proud of our... cast.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, it's cool because obviously it's a slow process, but you are seeing, just trying to, like, women-loving women plots more often, not a lot, but more often, like have you seen Let It Snow on Netflix?
I've not, but I have heard about the queer storyline.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's very, I get a trope in a sense, like one of them's out, one of them isn't, one of them tries to make it clear that she likes her, the other one doesn't want to, you know, come out in front of her friends. So it's a very, you know, we've seen it before, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter.
Like, we've seen it before, but you know what? It, like, this sounds really bad. The rest of the movie was fine. Like, it introduced me to Hole of the Moon by the Waterboys. Great song, but, like, a whole lot more of the straight storylines could have been cut a lot shorter because it was the girl and girl storyline that I just found so much more interesting. And but yeah, it's a great film and it's cool seeing something like that. It's a
in
teen
the mainstream
movie.
In the teen movie. Yeah. And I think, you know, Blockers, which came out in 2018, that had an excellent queer story in it as well. So yeah, it's great seeing these you know, the element, like things like that, being like there is a story strand in a film that is very mainstream, and that is really important to have that there.
Absolutely. Blockers had an Australian actress as well. Yeah. Geraldine.
Geraldine, yeah. As a fun fact, played Abby in the play.
No way. That's awesome.
So Geraldine originally was in the play, and then Zoe Tarakis took over Geraldine to play Abby in the film.
Yeah,
wow. And they were both in the same season of Janet King with Marta. So
yeah,
it's a very
friends.
Comfortable,
friends
yeah, very tight little circle.
No, I love it. Mm. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Monica. This has been a really, really great chat. And
no worries.
Good luck with everything.
Thank
Big congratulations.
You. Thank you very much.